According to the history books, the American continents once symbolized a brave new world where anything was possible. Or so we were led to believe. Sometimes a single discovery can shake our entire understanding of the Americas, from exposing uncomfortable truths, scrubbing the shine off beloved heroes, or challenging cherished beliefs. And there's been more than just one discovery, so join me as we delve into some of the most uncomfortable and controversial finds in American history.
You're listening to
Be Amazed.
We've all been led to believe that in 1492, Italian explorer Christopher Columbus was the first person to set foot in America, claiming the land we now call the USA. It turns out that's not true. Columbus wasn't the first to discover North America. He never even stepped foot in it. The first Americans were, unsurprisingly, the Native Americans, who came from what's now known as Asia some 30,000 to 12,000 years ago. If we're talking about the first Europeans in America, then let's go over to Lance-Meadows, Newfoundland in Canada. Back in 1960, an excavation by Norwegian archaeologists Annie Stein and Helga Ingstad revealed 8 mound buildings of Norse origin. That's right, Vikings. Findings showed that the first Norseman, who they named Leif the Lucky, first stepped foot on Canadian soil in the 11th century after setting sail from Greenland, beating Columbus by 400 years. Previous Icelandic legends told of Norse people arriving in a new land and then building homes and farms. They then came across Native Americans who were not happy to see Vikings on their land, resulting in a major conflict between the two. We don't know exactly what happened to these Norse people in Lance, but the Icelandic sagas end with them deciding to leave the discovered country. Real-life Vikings probably hightailed it after living there for around 10 years just to steer clear of any Americans. Either way, school textbooks should really ditch Columbus and talk about Lucky Leif. For one, I think he's got a much cooler name. We all dig a good treasure hunt, pun entirely intended there, and one guy who decided to start his own epic version was Forrest Fenn, a pilot and art dealer from Santa Fe, New Mexico. He'd led an adventurous life, amassing valuable treasures from all over the world. Then in 2010, at the age of 80, he published his memoirs titled The Thrill of the Chase. In this book, he revealed that he had buried a chest filled with $2 million worth of gold and other valuables somewhere in the Rocky Mountains. The pages featured a 24-line poem with clues to where the treasure was buried. A decade later, one man hit the jackpot. Jack Stoof, a medical student who sold the treasure in 2022 to pay off his student loans. What a nice story. A classic American tale of triumph over adversity. I'm afraid that's not the end of it. Thousands of people set out to find the gold, with some hunters becoming so obsessed that they went bankrupt in their search. But they were the lucky ones. At least 5 people lost their lives trying to traverse the wilderness in search of the treasure. Finn himself was stalked and his home broken into by hunters trying to get more information on the treasure's whereabouts. The old man was even accused of never hiding any treasure in the first place, and that Stoff was lying about finding it. That they were both just a couple of frauds. Jeez, so not the classic American tale of triumph after all. Sounds more like a horror story. Would you have gone as far as those crazed treasure hunters to try and get your hands on the Finn treasure? Let us know in the comments if the platform allows it. Now on to the next one. As a kid, I was told the age-old Bible story of Noah's Ark. You know, where God comes to Noah and tells him to build a massive ship and fill it with 2 of every animal to avoid a world-ending flood? Today, most agree that this is nothing more than a fable, but one discovery may prove that Noah's Ark was the real deal. In 1944, Buchanan, West Virginia, 10-year-old Newton Anderson was in his parents' basement collecting coal for the furnace. He picked up a particularly large chunk only to drop it, splitting the coal in 2. Inside was a metal object, a brass bell. Now, all coal was once vegetation, and coalification, which is the conversion of vegetation to coal, takes roughly 300 million years. Humans are only supposed to have been on Earth for at least 6 to 2 million years, so how'd the bell get in there? Creationists argue that the Virginia Bell is a sign that human civilization, along with the biblical Noah, existed around 300 million years earlier than scientists think. According to creationism, when the seas rose, early civilization would have been buried under sedimentary rock, leaving all their junk behind. However, most cases of these out-of-place artifacts turn out to be caused by natural formations like clay coating a modern object over time. In 2007, Anderson took part in a lie detector test to validate his story and passed with flying colors. He said that had the chunk not been coal, he wouldn't have bothered picking it up. Hold on. Over 60 years would have passed since Anderson found that bell. Can we really rely on someone's memory when that much time has passed? I'll let you guys be the judges. There's nothing like flying through the sky in an airplane. We all think of these machines as a 20th century invention. With the North American Wright brothers successfully flying the first plane in 1903. Well, buckle up, because the first aircraft might have appeared much earlier and much further south than we thought. Between the 5th century to the 10th century CE, the Quimbaya civilization prospered in the areas bordering the Cauca River Valley in Colombia. These people were master goldsmiths crafting exceptional pieces of art. Though none are more famous than a collection of 123 pendants looted by tomb robbers during the 1800s. They've been dubbed the Quimbaya artifacts and measure about 2 to 3 inches in length. Despite being small in size, they've made a big impact, catching the world's attention in the 1970s. Some have noticed their resemblance to flying machines, complete with tail rudders and propellers. Such technology is thought to be way beyond the realms of the Quimbaya time period, leading to many, let's say, colorful theories surrounding their origin. Perhaps Quimbaya people were granted this technology by aliens. Or maybe they were contacted by time travelers who revealed the secrets of air travel. However, those pesky skeptics have pointed out that the artifact's resemblance to planes is probably pure coincidence, with the treasures actually depicting fish and birds. I suppose that makes sense for most of them, but honestly, if you look up images of the Quimbaya artifacts and zoom in on the most plain-looking one, you'll see exactly what I mean. It has what genuinely looks like delta-shaped wings, a tail rudder, and even something resembling a cockpit. I don't know any fish or bird that looks much like a plane. Walt Disney was a giant of American cinema, founder of Disney Studios and creators of some of the world's most beloved films and characters like Mickey Mouse. Considering how pure and wholesome the films were, surely kind Uncle Walt was just as pure. Well, in 1993, through the Freedom of Information Act, the New York Times found that the FBI had files on Walt. These files revealed that from 1940 until he died, Walt secretly supplied information about his workers to the FBI. That's right, Uncle Walt was a spy. In the 1940s, as the psychological battle between America and the Soviet Union raged, fear and paranoia took hold. Disney, known for his conservative views, was no exception. In 1954, he was given the title of Special Agent in Charge Contact. As such, Disney reported to the government about Hollywood workers if they were suspected of pro-communist beliefs. He even let FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover edit Disney film scripts, removing anything disparaging of the FBI in the 1962 comedy Moon Pilot. In this era, which was about the time family classics like 101 Dalmatians and Mary Poppins were being made, Americans could be fired from their work or even arrested for having pro-communist beliefs. But Walt went one step further and testified to the House Un-American Activities Committee. There he formally and falsely accused striking workers and the Screen Actors Guild of being communists rather than people just wanting better pay and working conditions. He even brought in armed guards to deal with them and once had to be physically restrained from attacking one of the striking workers. While being an FBI contact wouldn't have been unusual in this era, Disney's actions endangered his workers' careers and livelihoods. Wow, I'm never going to be able to watch Mary Poppins the same ever again. In the beginning, there was the Big Bang. Then there were microorganisms, and now we've got the world we know today. But in 1944, a find in Arcambro, Mexico, threw a curveball at this idea. German man Valdemar Hjulsrud came across a trove of little clay figurines depicting an odd mix of prehistoric monsters and humans. Over time, Hjulsrud unearthed over 30,000 of these sculptures and, intrigued by his discovery, decided to have them examined. Initial tests in 1969 and 1972 suggested they were from 2500 BC, making them 4,500 years old. Upon hearing about the miraculous figurines, young Earth creationists claimed they were evidence that Earth could only be a few thousand years old as described in the Book of Genesis. They believe the world was created in 6 days and that the Akambaro figures, supposedly crafted by an ancient indigenous civilization, fit their idea of a world where humans coexisted with prehistoric creatures. Does this mean the Aztecs really did ride dinosaurs? Probably not. Looking at the figurines, you can see there's no weathering or dirt lodged in the cracks, which discredits the notion that these things are thousands of years old. If that weren't enough, later tests in 1976 and 1978 put the figurines' origins in the 1930s or 1940s, around the time Hjulsrud found them. No one seems to know who made the figures or how they got there, though most likely it was just locals playing a prank. But what's your take? Do you believe that the figurines are evidence of the creation story, or are they a total fabrication? Let us know in the comments if the platform allows. In our modern age, it seems like scientists have this whole evolution thing sorted. A long time ago, dinosaurs were hanging around, then an asteroid punched the Earth in the face, wiping them all out. Finally, giving mammals their chance to shine. Case closed. Or is it? Let's dive into the Paluxy River in Texas, home to the highest concentration of dinosaur tracks in the country. In 1908, a flood revealed fossils hidden beneath rocky layers. People couldn't help but notice some impressions looked like human footprints. But what would human tracks be doing next to those of dinosaurs? There's about a 60 million year difference between dinosaur extinction and humans first appearing in Africa. Clifford Burdick, a geologist and dedicated creationist, believed that the tracks were made only 4,800 years ago at the supposed time of Noah's flood. In his view, the floodwaters are what made the ground muddy, leaving lasting impressions. Today, young Earth creationists, you know, those guys who believe God did all the work, assume that those prints are proof that the world was made in a week, allowing humans and dinosaurs to walk alongside each other. But hang on. Didn't the creationists already claim Noah's flood happened 300 million years ago when they found that West Virginia bell? I mean, I've never read the Bible, but I'm fairly sure it only mentions one great flood. And I don't think it lasted for 300 million years. Also, paleontologists have pointed out that the so-called human prints were much more likely to have been made by another dinosaur, such as a Camptosaurus, which then eroded over millions of years, leading them to resemble human feet. So did dinosaurs and humans really coexist? And if they did, why weren't they mentioned in the Bible at any point? And if the Bible had dinosaurs in it, I reckon church services would be much cooler.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly than we used to, but for a lot of people, taking that first step and actually asking for support can still feel surprisingly difficult. It's interesting how our attitudes can change while the pressure we feel from the world around us doesn't always keep up. That's something BetterHelp's latest research looked into. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from doing so. That's a pretty striking gap. We may believe therapy is a positive thing, but stigma can still stop people from reaching out. One of the best ways to change that is simply by normalizing the conversation, checking in with friends, encouraging people to seek support when they need it, and reminding each other that asking for help is a sign of strength, not weakness. BetterHelp has over 30,000 licensed therapists and has served more than 6 million people worldwide. If your first therapist isn't the right fit, you can switch to another at any time. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Okay, now it's time to get into some of the darker controversies that stain American history. You've probably seen clips of celebrities acting weird and heard crazy conspiracy theories claiming they're victims of government mind control. Come on, that's nuts. The US government would never try to brainwash its citizens so obviously, right? Right? Well, in 1974, the CIA were accused of just that, leading President Gerald Ford to order an investigation. Around 20,000 documents were uncovered revealing a 1950s program codenamed MKUltra. During the Cold War, the U.S. government feared that American prisoners of war were being brainwashed by Soviet, Chinese, and Korean agents. The fear grew so much that in 1953, CIA Director Alan Dulles approved a covert operation aimed to control human behavior with drugs, paralytics, and electroshock therapy to see if it really could be done. Between 1953 to 1973, more than 150 experiments on humans were carried out in universities, hospitals, and prisons across the USA and Canada. What's horrifying, though, is that many of the participants did not consent to these tests and were unaware that they were being experimented on until it was too late. Doctors tested a concept called depatterning, where an individual's mind is, through awful means, reduced to a childlike state that could be rebuilt under the doctor's control. For example, people were needlessly put in induced comas for over a month with a recording saying your mother hates you on loop. Of course, victims were traumatized by such experiments and left with life-altering mental illnesses. The CIA not only lied about these tests, but also attempted to destroy all related documents. The 20,000 records only survived by chance after being incorrectly filed. To date, neither the agency nor the American government have apologized or offered compensations to its victims. Yeah, like I said, darker. Much darker. In the First World War, soldiers saw the arrival of a terrible weapon, mustard gas. It was a chemical warfare agent that scorched the skin, leaving victims with blisters and unable to breathe. Both sides used the weapon to maim enemy soldiers, but it turned out it wasn't just the enemy they used it on. In 1993, the U.S. government declassified documents that reported on experiments carried out in World War II. These findings revealed that over two decades after World War I, the U.S. Navy tested mustard gas on their own soldiers. Fearing that this chemical weapon would be used in the Second World War, the U.S. Navy wanted to check if their updated masks and clothes could protect them. Surprise, surprise, they didn't. Sailors, many of whom were no older than 20, were told they were going to be part of a test, but nobody bothered to explain the details. They were led into a gas chamber, exposed to the chemical, and left to suffer the horrific effects. Even when they begged to be let out, they were refused. What's worse, they picked sailors from minority groups like African and Asian Americans, purely to see how the gas affected different skin colors. My God. For many, this traumatic event would not be the end of their suffering. Victims were left with burns, eczema, breathing problems, and even skin cancer. In 2015, one victim at the age of 70 still visibly suffered from some of these ailments. These men weren't allowed to talk about the horror and were threatened with dishonorable discharge or imprisonment to keep them silent. It was only in 1993 that the Pentagon let these men tell their stories. This isn't the proud military tale most Americans see, but those declassified files expose the barbarity the military is capable of against soldiers, even their own. Okay, let's move back to a slightly lighter topic. If there's one thing the Aztecs loved crafting, it's crystal skulls. For decades, they've famously graced the collections of well-reputed museums all over the world, with each institution adamantly claiming they're of Aztec origin dating back between the 16th and 13th centuries. But let's jump to 1992, where Jane Walsh, an anthropologist at the Smithsonian Institution, received a strange package from an anonymous donor. It was a milky white quartz skull measuring about 10 inches. An accompanying note claimed that the skull was of Aztec origin like the rest and came from Mexico City, where it belonged to dictator Porfirio Diaz. But Walsh knew that something was wrong with this so-called artifact because it was made from carborundum, a material mass-produced in 1893. so it certainly wasn't of Aztec origin. She smelled a rat and after doing a bit of digging into the history of crystal skulls, realized that rat was Frenchman Eugene Bobon. He was an amateur archaeologist in the mid to late 1800s who specialized in Mexican antiquities. Aware of how ignorant museums were of Mesoamerican culture, he invented crystal skulls, manufactured many of them in Germany, and then sold them on to duped customers. The museums trusted Bobon's expertise and bought the so-called artifacts without hesitation. The legend of crystal skulls in Mesoamerica have remained entwined ever since, with many people today still falling for Bobon's skullduggery. Walsh never found out who posted that mysterious skull to the Smithsonian, but whoever they were accidentally revealed how boneheaded museum appraisers could be. We all know there's no such thing as giants, yet there's a passage in the Bible's book of Genesis that tells of how giants, or Nephilim, roamed the earth in the early days of creation. That's never been proven, though, has it? Well, in 1869 in Cardiff, New York, farmer William Stubb Newell's workers dug up something. Upon heaving it out, they saw it was the petrified body of a giant. It measured over 10 feet tall and weighed more than 3,000 pounds. That's twice the weight of your average cow. News of the big man spread, with some claiming it must be an ancient creature petrified by swampy waters. The discovery aligned with the belief in ancient giants, with the faithful paying Stubb to let them see the biblical marvel. However, locals recalled a man named George Hull delivering a mysterious crate to Stubb's farm a few years prior. It was later revealed that Hull, motivated by his steadfast atheism, hired a sculptor to craft the giant to prove how gullible believers were. He told his distant relative Stubb to bury it and then discover it. Throughout the ages, many people have claimed to have found remains of our gigantic ancestors. In 1895, a giant was supposedly found in San Diego, only to be made of gelatin. Even in the 21st century, a colossal excavation made the rounds across the internet, with some newspapers reporting the find as fact, when it's actually a nifty bit of Photoshop. Whoa, when it comes to big lies, these are giant. In 1776, America's third president, Thomas Jefferson, wrote in the Declaration of Independence, "All men are created equal." The contradiction being that Jefferson, like more than half of America's founding fathers, owned enslaved people. In fact, his abuse of power and hypocrisy went further. Even in his own lifetime, there were rumors that Jefferson had borne children with Sally Hemings, one of the enslaved women, on his Monticello plantation. Initially and historically, many patriots denied a founding father, one whose face was carved into Mount Rushmore, would do such a thing. But the claim was investigated in 1998 when a DNA study by Dr. Eugene Foster found that Sally's youngest son, Eston Hemings, shared the same Y chromosome haplotype with a descendant of the official Jefferson bloodline. In other words, Eston was the son of someone in the Jefferson family. Hemings' child was said to bear a close resemblance to the president, even changing his racial identity to white in 1852 and adopting the surname Jefferson in later life. The diary showed that the founding father was present on the Monticello plantation during the times all of Sally's six children were conceived, and all this has led most to conclude that Jefferson was indeed the father of Eston, if not all of Hemings' children. We'll probably never know what the nature of Jefferson and Hemings' relationship was, but considering Sally was never officially freed, even after Jefferson's death, they were not equal. I guess that means the greatest men are capable of the greatest abuses. I know three things about George Washington. First, he was the USA's first president. Second, he was one of the greatest Americans in history. And thirdly, he had wooden teeth. But what if I told you that at least one of those things wasn't strictly true? Washington famously had teeth problems that plagued him throughout his life, and he ended up using these terrifying-looking dentures. Imagine what he would have looked like with his mouth open. Yikes! In 2005, extensive studies of his false teeth found that, contrary to popular belief, they weren't made of wood. They were a jumble of ivory from elephants, hippos, and walruses, as well as teeth from horses, cows, and humans. The brown appearance of his dentures, while wood-like, was due to staining from wine and tobacco. Now, I couldn't believe that some people would offer up their own teeth to be used as dentures, but it turns out it wasn't that simple. According to a note in his 1784 ledger, Washington likely bought 9 teeth from slaves, but just because he paid for their teeth doesn't mean that they had the option to refuse. Sadly, Washington was no exception to the Founding Fathers' ownership of enslaved people. While famously calling slavery a hideous blot at his Mount Vernon plantation, he held 123 slaves. And while he did advocate for rewards to incentivize those enslaved instead of punishment, he did also encourage violence if rewards didn't work. Towards the end of his life, Washington had doubts about slavery and freed all 123 of the people in his will. Still, it's a level of hypocrisy that's usually skimmed over in the history books, and just because he's a founding father does not mean he's beyond reproach. Back in 1999, residents in the small town of Onava, Sonora were digging an irrigation canal only to stumble upon a 1,000-year-old cemetery with 25 human burials. But that wasn't the weirdest thing the townsfolk found that day. 13 of the skulls they found were deformed. They were elongated and pointed at the back. The burial ground belonged to a pre-Hispanic people who practiced head binding. Indigenous Americans purposely shaped these distinctive skulls by tying wooden boards and cloth to their children's heads. As the head grew, the pressure of the bindings would cause it to form this conical look. Man, I moan when I have a headache. The strange appearance of these skulls has led some to believe in the existence of ancient aliens in Meso and South America. Well, that's just plain wrong. Linking these cultures with extraterrestrials is pretty ignorant because evidence of similar rituals has been found on every continent, except Antarctica, of course. There's still a debate about the health risks of cranial deformation, but it was a condition many lived through into adulthood. The practice is still carried out today in indigenous populations the world over for a variety of reasons, such as meeting beauty standards, flaunting social status, and tradition. But who knows, maybe having a long head will come back into style and be the next TikTok trend. Well, a lot of what I thought I knew about the Americas has been questioned. What find shocked you the most? Let us know in the comments if the platform allows it, and if you enjoyed this episode, hit follow wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss the next one. Thanks for listening.